Welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. This is Eric Loomis, and I'm very happy to be here with Rob Farley and Scott Lemieux for our NFL playoffs podcast here, getting it out not before the first round, but before the second. So we have a little bit more to talk about here. And with me as well is this delicious Deschutes Planet Plum, which is a sour red ale aged in wine and brandy barrels, brimming, not just with, but brimming with notes of dark red fruit and plum, according to the label, which I have to say is quite good. So anyway, gentlemen, thank you for being here today.
Thank you. I'm only drinking seltzer, but it is in a Von Ebert glass, so I am celebrating the Portland beer industry in my own way. So maybe I don't think I have any Portland stuff in my fridge right now, but I will certainly celebrate with some kind of Pacific Northwest adult beverage later this evening.
So what I got here is it's a little bit of a departure. It's a little bit different. So this is tequila plus Mountain Dew Zero Sugar Spark. And this drink doesn't have a name, and that's a good thing, because honestly, it should be forgotten, right? And honestly, I probably will forget it by the end of the evening.
So that's one good thing about a bad drink, is that you'll never remember the recipe. If you're
right. Although, to be honest, anything mixed with like fake diet Mountain Dew is like probably going to be a bad idea. But you know, we'll move past the Detroit Lions of beverages and get
a little
into
unfair to the Lions. I'd say that's more the Jaguars. Of, you
know, maybe like, so.
Like
maybe
a, like yeah, like a you know sort of like a Gordon's G&T or the Lions. You know, like actually respectable effort. Just,
okay. Okay. All right. Doing all right. For a wedding. Maybe a little more than I'd give them, but okay. Well, okay. Anyway, let's talk about some NFL. So we're just going to start with some initial thoughts on the season, a few teams, that few storylines we wanted to talk about, and then get into the game. So Scott, you want to start?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing we can talk about is the you know, some related issues. Right before we got on, I was making fun of somebody on Twitter who asked if the Seahawks should trade Russell Wilson for a first rounder or Daniel Jones, which is, you know, roughly we summarize as like eat a like five bowls of shit. But you know, it's actually an interesting question. You know, in that, you know, like Carroll and Schneider will be staying, but Ken Norton Jr. was the defensive coordinator, was fired. And I can't really argue with that, although, you know, I suspect that like it's really a question of whether Carroll's actually willing to change his approach. You know, but there's sort of two ways to look at the Seahawks, one of which is, you know, the sort of the jig is finally up, you know, the sort of the bad drafts caught out to them. Maybe it's time to trade Wilson and move on. And the other way of looking at it is that they were still a top 10 DVOA team. And really what happened is that Wilson got hurt. And then, you know, whereas the previous few years, they've sort of, you know, had a very good run of luck in close games. You know, this year was sort of, you know, the luck sort of ran out the other way. But really, this is still a team with, you know, enough talent, you know, to be competitive. And so, you know, it's more like, you know, we have Wilson, we have Metcalf, we have Lockett. You know, let's, you know, try to sort of do what the Rams did and try to build around that until they can't play anymore. And I'm generally not a big tear it down guy. So I sort of lean towards that. It would also probably depend what you could get. You know, there are, I think, some concerns with Wilson for sure. You know, but, you know, I think overall, you know, he's still a quarterback who you could win with, you know, and so I'd be pretty reluctant to move on, but I don't know how you feel, Art.
Well, I mean, I think that the Seahawks were the unluckiest team in the NFL this year. And I think that made me sort of reconsider the whole thing. I mean, I was sort of ready to say, okay, it's time to, especially when they were, you know, 5-8 or 5-10 and, you know, 3-8. It's like, well, but then you look, I mean, you know, they're still plus 29 in point differential, which is just maybe not as quite as important as, you know, the run differential is in baseball because of fewer games, but nonetheless, right? I mean, they have the same, you know, exact same point differential as the Saints, who finished 9-8. The Raiders and Steelers, who made the playoffs, had vastly lower, you know, were outscored by significant amounts. Like the Raiders were outscored by 65 points and went 10-7. And so, you know, I think it's a little tough for me to say, oh, let's tear it all down, when the larger context suggests a team that certainly has its issues and most certainly is not a real contending team at this point, but a team that still is pretty respectable. And so, you know, if this happens again next year and they're below 500 and Wilson continues to say, take a step back, well, then maybe it's time to move on. But they don't think that you tear down a team right now, because I don't even know what are you really starting with, right? I mean, like, you know, okay, you trade Wilson for a couple of first round picks, but there's no good quarterbacks in the draft this year. So what do you do there? And I'm really hesitant, given the quarterback situation in the NFL, to move on from a still well above average quarterback at any point.
You know, I mean, I think that sort of plays into something that I've noticed this year, which I think is, you know, should really give all of the NFL GMs headaches, or at least all the ones who need quarterbacks. It feels like there are more teams with massive question marks at QB this year than typical, and there are no really clear prospects in the draft for a real franchise quarterback. I mean, there are a lot of teams that need quarterbacks, including some that made the playoffs. You know, even Derek Carr's future with the Raiders is a little bit unclear, although he's been really good the last 2 years, but people are saying that he may go. You know, Baker Mayfield, you know, we may have figured out that he really isn't the guy in the end who's gonna lead Cleveland to the glory.
To write him off, I think.
Yeah. Right.
As a top quality. He's a bottom, you know, he's like a bottom tier starting quarterback. He's one of the 30 best quarterbacks in the NFL, but not one of the best 50. I think that's pretty
right. So the Colts, you know, I think that we figured out that Carson Wentz is not the solution. You know, Big Ben is gonna retire. The Houstons have nothing. The Houston Texans,
I think Davis Mills might be a functional.
I think he might have. Was he the best of the rookie QBs this year? We'll get to that when we talk
about it. I mean, unless you want to talk about Mac Jones, which, you know, is a very different scenario, you know, with a much better supported cast and a franchise that's functional.
Right. The Broncos, you know, I guess we have to see how long the Daniel Jones experience is going to last in New York. You know, I'm not a believer in Jalen Hurts. I know that some people are. I mean, it's a lot of the Washington football team, whatever the hell their name is going to be. I mean, it feels to me like that we have a lot of hurting for quarterbacks. But that may open up some opportunities for long-term backups, right? And we may see some of those drift to different places in the league. We'll see.
I mean, there was a story I was reading, I think, on The Athletic about 2 weeks ago, about the possibility for NFL expansion. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about, you know, it could go as high as 40 teams eventually. And I'm like, I get it, you know, linebacker and safety and you know, running back. Yeah, you could probably find guys. But who the hell's going to play quarterback? Like, no, who is quarterback 40 that someone's actually starting in the NFL? Like, I just cannot see how this is going to work.
Campos had a wonderful post a couple of years back, which was like, why is it that America seems unable to produce more than 15 competent professional quarterbacks at a given time in its history? Right. Right. I mean, you can't blame Joe Biden, but, you know, I mean, that's just the thing, right? I mean, it's hard to, I mean, you know, the answer is that maybe teams, you know, proceed without a great quarterback, but you're right. Is where are you going to find those 40 quarterbacks?
Another really interesting question is to what extent COVID may have set back. You know, it's really interesting that in what was supposed to be an excellent quarterback draft, you know, the only, you know, closest to a successful quarterback was Mac Jones, who again was sort of a high floor, low ceiling quarterback in a very good system. And I think you can see both of those things. But you know, Lawrence, and I would still be optimistic about Lawrence long term, but he was actually very terrible this year, like really no better than Taylor. You know, so there's a really not was, you know, they did not have a good year. One interesting thing is I know that I've seen some empirical analysis recently that there have been a lot fewer high impacts, like rookies and second year players in the NHL in recent years. And I think that's partly that there was just a run of generational stars, including the best since Lemieux. But I do wonder if, you know, that it does seem like, you know, like basically having a year where teams are playing a lot less and not playing in the same competition, you really do wonder if we're going to see, that we may also see that it could be particularly difficult, which would make me especially reluctant to move on from Wilson. You know, if we're going to see quarterbacks for the next couple of years who need more, seasoning and are harder to evaluate. I think that would make me, you know, it's very hard to find like a top level quarterback, and you should be very, very reluctant to give one away if you have one, because it's just, you know, it's really hard.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the class next year is supposed to be quite a bit better. You know, like I just threw up a, I just Googled Pro Football Network's 2023 mock draft, and five of the first eight picks are quarterbacks. So, which doesn't mean very much. But you know, it does mean it's probably going to be better than this year, but it's still remarkable just how poor quarterbacking remains. And yeah, I mean, I think in all sports, you're going to see the long-term effects of COVID probably be an issue going forward in terms of player development, but. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting baseball, right? Whether there's a differential impact either across position players, because I can see outfielders versus infielders, right? That outfielders have, you know, sort of require less collaboration with other players, where infielders really do, and between batters and pitchers, right? When whether that's going to play out over the next few years.
I mean, as a Mariners fan, you've got to be pretty concerned given Kalanick's performance last year, how missing that year could really hurt, you know, affect development as a hitter. And again, I mean, you may see that as an illusion, but I think that it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how prospects develop in baseball, because you know, that was one of the hardest hit sports in terms of development. That's, you know, having to essentially take a year off in your early 20s is a pretty big deal. And it'll be really interesting to see. And then if you have a lockout this year, you know, it's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see going forward. There is at least one other thing I wanted to discuss, which, and we can throw in sort of any observations, but, you know, there are two, I think, you know, so the Giants finally got rid of Joe Judge, which is hilarious given that, I mean, he basically had to just massively fuck up to get fired. And he genuinely massively fucked up. Like, basically, Merritt doesn't seem to care if you lose as long as you don't just literally embarrass the organization on a weekly basis, and he couldn't meet that bar. But the surprising one is first of all, Brian Flores, who I think did overall an excellent job in Miami and just seemed to have lost a power struggle to a GM who basically had an enormous amount of draft capital he pissed away. And I guess the question is how you feel about Tua, right? Because the one criticism you can make about Flores is that he couldn't settle on an offensive coordinator. They did that dumb thing this year where they had two, which, you know, has not been tried much for very good reason. You know, and so, you know, the argument would be that, you know, he didn't do as good at, you know, and he was kind of torpish with Tua sort of taking him out. So if you think that Tua is still a great prospect, then maybe it makes sense. But basically, I think Flores is right that, like, you know, Tua is never going to be the same after that injury. And that the real fault lies here with the general manager basically pissing away an enormous amount of draft capital. And that basically, as I see it, Flores got about as much out of those rosters as you could. So I think that's it's a mistake, not only in that I think Flores is really good, although I do think that he needs to, you know, once you've got the quarterback there, you still need to do your best to develop him. And I don't think he did a good job of that. But, you know, just like, I don't know why you would commit to the GM, who has really not done a very good job with the opportunities he got from all that draft capital. But I don't know if you guys saw it the same way, but I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, I thought that one was about the most shocking of all of the firings. I mean, the guy, you know, turns Miami season from complete garbage into one that's quite competitive. And it's not as if the Dolphins have had a heck of a lot to go on. I mean, and I guess, yeah, you went all in on Tua, but I don't necessarily see that as Flores's fault. Yeah, okay, maybe he could do more to develop it, but that could be done through, you know, and that can also be done through, you know, hiring the right assistants and things like that. And I, you know, again, where does Miami go here that they're going to just, you know, find the guy starting over for like the 30th time in the last 35 years? There's two things. One is it shows, again, the racism that black coaches face compared to white coaches. And also just the stupidity of NFL ownership and the ways in which so many of these guys just show how stupid they are consistently through the management decisions that they make in the NFL. And there's a reason that there are 10 to 12 franchises that are clown shows, and the Dolphins are one of them, as are the Giants.
Yeah, and I would say probably the even stronger argument for racism, because, you know, the Dolphins, I guess, sided with their African-American GM rather than their coach, but I still think there's those roots of it. But the really striking one is firing Dave Culley, you know, because I think Dan Campbell got positive reviews, and I think he deserved them. Like, I think I like the fact that the Lions were competitive. I think that they, you know, they showed a lot more. You know, I sort of agree with Mike Tannier that he proved that he's Rex Ryan rather than just a complete, you know, so not – a great coach, but like, you know, a coach who could, you know, who can do better for you. But basically Colley did the same thing. Like the Texans were shockingly competitive for what I think was easily the worst roster in football. You know, not only they win four games, but they're pretty, I mean, they beat the Titans. I mean, they, you know, the, I guess the best argument I could have for firing Dave Colley is that they're the reason we had to watch the fucking Steelers in the playoffs. You know, cause they knocked out the, you know, Chargers in week 17. But, you know, I mean, I just don't see, like, you know, like Davis Mills basically played as well as Trevor Lawrence did. You know, I mean, I just
probably
don't
better,
like,
probably better.
Yeah, probably better. Yeah. So, I mean, I just don't know how, you know, the receivers are all like guys who were like the third best receiver on the Patriots 10 years ago. Like, I just don't understand how, you know, like, well, what more could he have done? Like, to me, he did exactly what Dan Campbell did, which is to, like, you know, get the best out of a weak roster and maybe, like, you know, show some promise going forward. So that's just an incredibly dysfunctional organization. But I mean, that's just, you know, that's just about as clear as, you know, and he had a 2-year contract. It's like, that's about as close as you can come to say that, like, he was, you know, we hired him so Roger Goodell won't yell at us about diversity. And now we'll just, like, hire another, like, you know, white, you know, guy who shared a cab with Bill Belichick once, lose 16 games again.
Rob, do you have any thoughts here?
No. I mean, that's all my thoughts. So I have one thought, right? That this drink is terrible, and the more Mountain Dew Zero Sugar Spark I add to it, the worse it gets. So
it's almost as if drinking Mountain Dew is the problem to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes a bad idea on paper can work well in theory, but then sometimes a bad idea in paper is, you know, proves out to be precisely, you know, what was expected, but this would seem to be fall into the latter category.
Yeah, I guess one more thing before we go into the the playoffs, and that is, you know, I'm curious for you all, what is your most, what do you think, what team disappointed you the most this year? We won't talk about team that surprised you, because those teams may well be in the playoffs, but what team do you think really, you know, should have been something and was not?
I mean, for me, it was the Chargers, right? I mean, you know, I mean, they certainly played like not just simply merely a playoff. They played like not merely a playoff team, but a strong playoff team. And at other times, they lost completely winnable games. And you know, they had a late season loss that was basically COVID generated. But, you know, I know there's still a lot of optimism coming out of the Chargers and coming out of the Chargers camp. And you know, Herbert was up and down, but he was mostly up. But you know, I can't see how you don't see this season as a disappointment for them.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think that they are, I still think there's a ton of reason for optimism, but, you know, I mean, first of all, if anybody can explain what Brandon Staley was doing in that overtime game where he could have got his team into the playoffs and call that timeout. I don't know. I think I have begun to wonder if he's a little over his head, but there's talent there. You know, there's some holes. I mean, I think the Chargers will be okay going forward, but certainly this was a year, especially given that the AFC was not good. I mean, like, you know, the top team has 5 losses, right? I mean, it's an unprecedented situation for a number one seed to have 5 losses. So, you know, I there was definitely an opportunity there, but you know, I'd probably say with Browns personally, as the most disappointing team, I'm a little surprised they were so mediocre. You know, certainly Mayfield is not, you know, not what they were hoping he would be, but there's still a lot of talent on that team in a very winnable division. And for that, out of the Ravens, you know, really collapsed. So that's something to think about too. Yeah.
That's a good
that's
one.
That's just so injury driven though. I think that's, you know, I mean, that's, I would, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the, you know, I mean, and it was really a pretty chalk year. Like I would say that for the most part, you know, the playoff teams shook out roughly as expected in the end, despite a lot of shakes. But yeah, I mean, I think the Ravens are obviously the best team going in that missed the playoffs, but that's just, I mean, they had no running backs and no secondary by the end of the, you know, and they were competitive. It's not like they were just getting, you know, blown out. I mean, they certainly could have very easily made the playoffs with a few. So, you know, I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong there. You know, same thing in the, you know, the Saints, you might have, you know, did pretty well given that, you know, they, you know, spent half a year, you know, and again, I do blame Sean Payton for, you know, not having any backup plan to Winston, but we knew that going in, right? You know, so I mean,
well, you mean the giant contract at Taysom Hill didn't really inspire you with confidence in the end?
Jesus, good thank God. You know, but really, no, I never, you know, I didn't expect anything out of the Panthers, for example. So I mean, the Chargers seem to be the one, and that's another way of looking at the Flores thing, is that, like, if the Dolphins draft Herbert rather than Tua, Flores still has a job, let's be frank. So, you know, which is, should, to me, should make it pretty clear who's at fault there. And, you know, and I don't want to slam them too hard for that pick. I mean, I think the Tua versus Herbert was a very legitimate question. You know, it's not like there was a consensus that, you know, Herbert was, and I think even as Oregon guys, I don't think either of you felt strongly that Herbert was better than Tua coming out. So I'm not necessarily even criticizing the decision at the time, but it's pretty clear that was right. But, you know, the thing is, like, when you found a potential elite quarterback, like, these first years are precious, you know, because it's the rookie contract where it's really, it's like, once you have to pay the market value, it becomes a lot harder to build a team around them. So it's really, you know, when you have the chance to sort of get into the playoffs, you know, you need to, and that's what the Bengals successfully did. You know, and it's pretty, I would say it's pretty disappointing not to, you know, and especially when you know, lose to the, you know, you've got to be able to beat the Houston Texans. If, you know, if that's what it takes to get into the playoffs like that. And it's still pretty bad to be in overtime against, you know, I mean, like, the Raiders were nice and everything, but, you know, they should not have finished behind the Raiders either. I'm sorry. Right. That's especially given what was going on with that team this year. I mean, I give actually a lot of credit to Vegas, but that's a, you know, that's, it's not, they should be better. And that's just a weird thing with the Chargers. Like, it's basically exactly the Phillips Rivers years. Like, there's always, you know, after they fired Marty, there's always something, right? There's just, you know, the for some reason. So yeah, it's it. So I think that's the, I think Chargers the obvious answer there.
All right. Well, should we move on to talk about the upcoming playoff games? Since we've been.
Yeah, yeah. Let's start. I mean, so how about we go chronologically? So yeah. I think the Bengals Titans.
Bengals Titans are first. Yeah. Right. So I guess we should start by briefly discussing the first game that the winner of if these teams had played one of the games, and talk about that. So, you know, Titans are number one seed despite their five losses. Bengals. Bengals managed to win in a pretty decent game against the Raiders. But
it was one of the only good games.
It really was. Yeah, it was a terrible week of football. Good. But but you know, hey, you know, the NFL made more money. So, but yeah, I don't know. This is kind of an interesting game to me. I'm not as sold on the Titans as a lot of people are in terms of being a playoff contender. You know, and the Bengals, you know, they have a solid, you know, they do have a solid team. You know, Burrow is amazing. Jamar Chase is, if he doesn't drop the ball, is amazing. I mean, there's a lot of talent there. I would not be surprised to see an upset here. That's what I'm going to say. I think the 3.5 line is about right. I think this could be a really good game.
Yeah, I mean, the 3.5 line is really indicative of, I think, what is a lot of people's thinking on this, right? There's that, you know, the Titans did win. You know, it's not as if they went 8-0 and then and then 3-5 or something like that after Henry got hurt. I mean, they did win some games late, but they didn't look good while they were doing it. You know, it's not clear how Henry actually feels. And he was actually in decline right before he got hurt anyway. You know, I mean, I would love to be able to take the Bengals 3.5 plus 3.5 here, especially because, you know, that makes me like the Bengals guru. But, you know, the Bengals have also lost a lot of stupid games this year. Right. And they've lost them in pretty catastrophic ways. And so, you know, they're just not a team that I can rely on to step up and bring their best game. And, you know, the Tennessee fans, Tennessee plays in front of a pretty enthusiastic, this hasn't always been the case, but now they play in front of a pretty enthusiastic crowd. And I think that's going to matter there on the Saturday. So this is one where, I mean, I think that sort of the range of outcomes here is pretty wide. And, you know, the Bengals are obviously loaded with all kinds of talent, despite the fact that they don't have an offensive line. but it is very hard for me to go against the Titans at home in this game.
By the way, if you haven't seen it already, This week at Tenier linked to both the broadcast footage and the dots thing for the last Raiders pass. And it's just amazing. Like, first of all, the Raiders broadcaster gives just an incredible call of like, and that's the season's over, you know, like just the deflation's voice. But then you're wondering, like, why did Carr throw into triple coverage? And then you see the dots. And the reason is literally that was the only receiver who was anywhere near the end zone. Like, they had like four guys running check on a fourth down with the game ending, had four guys running like check down routes, including Waller. So Carr had only one. It was like, it was one of the worst play calls I've ever seen, which I think maybe explains why the Raiders aren't bringing back the coach, despite the fact that he, you know, did about as well, you know. But that's, you know, I strongly recommend looking at that. It's pretty amazing. The Titans are, you know, you don't have to give them credit. Like, on one level, I think it's pretty obvious that if the Chiefs or Bills play at like 85% of their potential, they're bad. You know, I mean, those should have been the top two teams in the conference. But the fact is, both of those teams just go through weird brownouts that I understand. And like the Titans, you know, like they're very solid, like week to week, you know, they do a lot. You know, the one thing I don't like, I don't like that three in it, you know, because it is, I could see this, you know, being a competitive game. If I actually decided to drive to Snoqualmie, I'd probably try to like make a money line bet and find something else to parlay it with, because that makes me a little nervous. But I think I would expect the Titans to win. Like, it feels a little bit like, I think the Bengals would be happy to get the one win, but they're pretty inconsistent, and they seem like the kind of team that like Tennessee should be well prepared. You know, and you know, they can get, you know, the one thing is that the Bengals are very vulnerable to a pass rush. And Vrabel's done a very good job, especially of creating an interior pass rush. And, you know, they don't need to like send a lot of people to get pressure. And I think that they could get Burrow to make just enough mistakes.
They responded pretty well. They responded pretty well to the Raiders pass rush. By the way, and I do want to acknowledge in more places that the Bengals game last week, I mean, that was the end of the curse of Bo Jackson, right? Yeah. That because Bo Jackson was injured in a Raiders victory over the Bengals in 1991. And so obviously, a 31-year curse, I think that's sufficient for the injury of Bo Jackson, right? I mean, that's, if you do that to sort of a generational athlete and you deserve to be terrible for 30 years, okay, and then you're fine, right? I mean, that seems very straightforward to me.
Yeah, and that's definitely not, Ed. Like, I'm very positive about the year the Bengals had, and they're just a very high variance team. So I wouldn't be shocked to see them beat the Titans. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat the Titans by two touchdowns. But I just think, just in general, I think that, you know, I would, you know, the, I think the models suggest that Tennessee should actually be favored by a little more. And I have no objection to that. I think they're, you know, you have to give them respect. I mean, again, whatever the team's maximum potential is, you know, the fact is, and the weird thing is, they didn't really benefit from the divisional schedule. Like, you might think that's the reason they fished out of Kansas City, but they were actually like 3-2 against the Jaguars, Texans, and Jets. So they sort of weirdly had some off games against bad teams, but they're right. I mean, they beat the Bills. Did they beat the Bills and Chiefs? I believe they did. So, you know, I mean, they ultimately deserve the number one seed. So, you know, I think that you have to respect a team like that at home. And I just think the Bengals are one year away. But obviously, you have to give credit to Rob for seeing that. And, you know, they had a very successful year. I mean, they came a long way. You know, they're making the progress they need to with their young quarterback. And this seems like, and especially since they now have two top receivers too. So they really have the core in place. I'm still not sure about the coach. That's one thing. I'm really not wild about I'm not entirely convinced that's going to be enough, but we'll see. But, you know, the teammate parentheses, and it's just credit for that. But, you know, the Titans really have a pretty, pretty impressive organization, and I would pick them.
All right. Well, the second game of the evening is the Niners and the Packers. I think that this is, of course, the time to talk about one of the worst play calls that I've ever seen, which was the Cowboys attempt to come back against the Niners with a called run for Dak Prescott with no time left on the clock. And not shockingly, they did not get to run another play. It was classic Mike McCarthy. And I just, that's just crazy. And then look, the Niners, they've had a nice comeback. They were struggling early in the season. They were tied with the Seahawks at one point after like eight games. I think they were both 3-5. Of course, the seasons went very differently. However, while I'm not quite as bullish on the Packers as other as everybody else, and in fact, I don't know, has there ever been a year before where the best team in the NFL had four losses? I mean, even given the 17 games, I mean, it's kind of remarkable. But nonetheless, even if you want to squint and say, well, you know, the Niners have a shot, I want to point out that the temperature. Projected temperature at 8 p.m. on Saturday night in Green Bay is 11 with a wind chill of minus 2. And I really struggle to see Jimmy Garoppolo winning in Green Bay in a playoff game with those conditions.
Well, here's where we see the impact of the fact that you know, the Niners move stadiums, right? Because, you know, that was like a September afternoon in Candlestick, right? I mean, literally, it may have said 62 degrees, but it felt like 11 with a wind chill of minus 2 at any given time that you were in Candlestick. But obviously things have changed for the Niners franchise. So just going back and talking about this play, I just want to reaffirm here, it was not the umpire's fault. It wasn't close, right? No. I mean, people are talking about this as if it were close, like, oh, if he put the ball down, then, but like it takes a second at least for that play to happen. Right. Like throwing the ball down does not happen instantaneously. The clock runs, right? It often runs 1 or 2 seconds when you do that. And so it wasn't close. It was just a terrible call. I mean, you could make the argument that Dak shouldn't even have tried to down it, right? He just should have just, you know, snapped it and fell back and see what happens. But his decision to down it is going to run off, even if the umpire gets it down, his decision to down it is going to run off the remaining time on the clock, right? It wasn't close. It was a stupid play. Dak, you know, he should have gotten down earlier. Right. You know, look, I mean, if we're being serious here, Dak should have realized how fucking stupid the play was. And he should have slid like 4 yards into his run just so he could get his line back and he could down the ball. So, yeah, fuck the Cowboys. I mean, and their fans and all of the people associated with that franchise.
Yeah, my biggest bet of the weekend was Raiders plus or Niners plus 140, and I really had to sweat that one out. But you know, my theory, which is always bet against Mike McCarthy in the playoffs, ended up paying out very well. You know, but yeah, it was just unbelievable. It was also an amazing call where Nance, to his credit, says, "I don't think it's going to work," and then Romo, apparently temporarily forgetting who's coach of the Cowboys, like, "Oh no, they'll have this drill. They'll know exactly what to do." Like, you know, and then of course like. Prescott's trying to like down the ball himself again. It was just like
no, this. Loomis can attest. Like as soon as he starts running, I said the game is over, right? Yeah. The game is over, right? Yeah. Because there was no way. Actually, I don't know if you were there, Loomis.
No, I wasn't there. I wasn't there. I was watching it in an Indianapolis brewery. And just laughing. I was just laughing. I'm like, what is going? Of course this is happening.
I had my friend and the girl and my daughters were there and I just, the game's over. Right. I said that as soon as he crossed the line of scrimmage, right. Game is over.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and that's just and the thing is what's especially amazing about McCarthy is that like his only fucking job is the CEO stuff. Like he doesn't call plays offensively or defensively, and no NFL coach has less say in personnel than the coach of the Cowboys. So it's like he's literally, his only job is to like prepare the teams Monday through Saturday and like drill them down and make game day decisions. And he's just horrible. Like I have no idea what he brings to the table. There is a problem with this game. And the thing is, like, the Niners, in terms of their talent, can absolutely beat the Packers. And I also agree that they're a little overrated. You know, one amazing thing, the Seahawks actually had a slightly better DVOA than the Packers, which I think is misleading because, like, the Packers play a lot of games, you know, they sort of play down to the level of their opposition, but they're never really threatened with losing. So I think the models don't give them a lot of credit for those wins. So, to be clear, I'm not claiming that the Seahawks were actually as good as the Packers. I don't believe that. But I do think that indicates that they do, you know, I think the Packers are vulnerable. Like they have terrible special teams. You know, like the defense is kind of up and down. You know, so I think they're vulnerable. And the 49ers, I mean, they have, you know, I mean, Deebo Samuel's amazing. They have a really good running game. They have a really good defense. You know, I mean, roster-wise, they should have a real chance there. My one concern is, I mean, the injuries to Bosa and Warner, that because they need, but I mean, they're without those guys, they're not. I mean, Rodgers will carve them up because the secondary is no good. The second thing is that, like, Shanahan, he's much better than McCarthy in that he's a really superb play caller and he's a really good like Monday to Saturday coach, but his game management is barely better than McCarthy's. Like it's real, like that punt in the fourth quarter after Warner and Bosa went out was one of the dumbest fucking things I've ever, you know, and he's got like arguably the best short yardage running game in the league. Like, what's like, why are you just give the ball back? Is, you know, just like, and he does stuff like that all the time. And it's just, it's sort of amazing. Like, and I'm not saying like Carroll to be at Bevel deserve all the criticism they've gotten for, but that was like one bad play call. Shanahan has presided over like two of the worst Super Bowl collapses in history and somehow gets like a fraction of the criticism. Like, you know, and that's not the kind of, you know, you can afford to make those mistakes against Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys, but you know, you make those mistakes in Lambeau against Aaron Rodgers, you're going to get beat. And so that, I would have a lot of concerns there. I think between their health, you know, and the, he doesn't have Mike McCarthy to sort of cancel out his errors. I would pick the Packers. You know, I certainly wouldn't be surprised. I think it should be a good game. But yeah, I don't like, I mean, it's pretty disturbing. Like that, if Shanahan does like that, that game should have been like 35-10 in terms of the play. Like the 49ers dominated for three quarters, but you know, they let the Cowboys hang around by settling for field goals. And then of course, you know, and the other theft we have the 49ers that once, at least once a game, Garoppolo will throw a ball right into a defender's chest from a clean pocket. You know, that's the other terror. That's what also made me reluctant to bet on the Niners. You just wait for that shoe to drop the whole fucking game, and it inevitably does. Like it's just yeah. And he also seems hurt too. In fact, like myself, I would not start him this week, but it seems like Shanahan is in on that. So I don't know. But yeah, there's too many red flags there. I gotta pick the Packers. I'm not happy about it, but
yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to Sunday.
Well, actually, can I have one more?
Of course.
The Packers are a team, and they're different than the Titans in this sense. The Packers are the sort of team that I expect is going to benefit a lot from the bye week, right? And not just Aaron Rodgers, but really the whole team. They feel they're just a bye week kind of team, right? I mean, they're just a team you expect to sort of marinate for a while and to use that time to get better. And I know, like, the Titans getting Derrick Henry back is a huge thing, but, you know, and you know, even if it gives – you know, Aaron Rodgers and an opportunity to do like four more podcasts with, you know, Joe Rogan. Right. But he seems to get better after he does those. Right. And, I feel like they benefit from having this extra week and just everything. I would take the Packers -6 on this.
Yeah.
And Rodgers was MVP by, I hate to say it, but he was MVP by a pretty substantial margin. Like it's not even a debate really. I mean, he had a fantastic year. There's no debate about that. I don't like it, but it's true.
Yeah. Well, it certainly seems to me anyway, that Sunday games are the two more interesting ones of the week. The 3 o'clock game, is the Rams and the Bucks. And, you know, I'm certainly gonna be the last person to bet against Tom Brady. I do think the Rams have a pretty good team. I really like the Odell Beckham pickup has worked out better than I kind of thought it would. I sort of figured it would be kind of a wash, but he's really taken off with that team. I like where the Rams are right now. I mean, admittedly, the Cardinals played a terrible game, but the Rams really did look good last weekend. Of course, sort of the Bucs against the Eagles. So I like this game a lot. The Bucs are favored by 3 at Tampa. That's probably about right. I'm glad I'm not a betting man because that would be a hard one for me to bet on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that the sort of revisiting our preseason discussion, I think we even talked about it in the offseason, the Stafford pick. You know, I think what we didn't give enough credit for is that, you know, Stafford, he was a good but never a great quarterback in Detroit, but he was the kind of quarterback that we should have appreciated. This is a guy who can work well with elite Hall of Fame receivers, right? And in the sense, like, you know, look, every quarterback benefits from having Hall of Fame receivers, right? But you could, I think, project the kind of relationship that he was going to have with Cooper Kupp, right? I mean, Cooper Kupp had, like, you know, by some measures, the greatest season for a wide receiver ever. And by other measures, like the third greatest season by a wide receiver ever. You know, that's something I think you could have projected from a veteran quarterback who is still healthy, who knows what he's doing, who knows how to work with, you know, generationally great wide receivers in the past. You know, Stafford is, you know, he's kind of, in a way, he's like the perfect guy to be, you know, leading Cooper Kupp and OBJ into the playoffs. I mean, and he really, you know, I mean, he really demonstrated that in the previous round and in most of the season, right? I mean, this is a devastating passing attack. You know, that said, you know, we're talking about Tom Brady. I mean, my favorite part of the last week's game was when, somehow somehow, you know, Gronk got lost in the end zone because apparently nobody can see, you know, Gronk, who was the most obvious human being in the universe. And he was back there just sort of sitting again. But it was the Eagles. What are you going to do? But, you know, I'm not, it's a really tough one, right? I mean, but I'll go out on a limb. I'll take the Rams and the points on this. Rams plus three.
Yeah, I suspect that if I get out there, I'm going to take the Rams both on the money line and with the points. And first of all, you know, I picked the Rams to be the conference final midseason, so I always like to stick with that unless I can. Now, I did diss the Packs, the Bucks a little bit, and that did not look good. That game was not, in fact, competitive. But, you know, I think that, you know, this is definitely a step up, you know, but I do think some of the concerns are still valid. You know, I think, like, obviously I would rather have Brady than Stafford, but if you compare passing games, you know, obviously the Rams have a lot more weapons, you know, and that's, you know, and I think that Brady is at the stage where, like, he needs more, you know, like, and especially if he's playing a team that can probably shut down his number one receiver, like, he needs weapons, you know, he relies on yards after the catch now. So I think that the sort of Antonio Brown being Antonio Brown at, the injury to, you know, I think that hurts a lot. The other thing too, is that the way to beat Brady has always been with the pass rush, and guess what? The Rams have Aaron Donald, Von Miller,
I mean, like in that previous game, like, I mean, the Rams made the Cardinals look ridiculous, right? Their defense made the Cardinals offense look ridiculous, right? I mean, just watching the game, it was a joke. Right. Like every time, you know, because at one point, right. And, it, you know, third quarter, OBJ has more passing yards than Irving. Right? I mean, like, and, you know, you can't afford to look ridiculous in the divisional round. I mean, so the Rams kind of have the entire package here in a way that I did not anticipate coming together. And it's a really, I mean, it's going to be a really interesting if they win this game moving on, because, I mean, they're a very formidable team.
Yeah, I mean, and they, you know, and I think what they did was sensible. So, like, if you're going to go all in, go all in. Like, they're going to be terrible in 4 years anyway. So there's not, like, there's no point in keeping any draft. Like, so you can get a fucking Von Miller for a second round, like, you do it. And that's, they've just done a lot better than the Seahawks. Like, you know, they got Von Miller for much less than the Seahawks paid for Jamal Adams. You know, that's a major problem, you know, and that's, you know, and, you know, and obviously there's a risk in a Stars and Scrubs team in that, you know, there's going to be some variance and you're vulnerable to injury. But if you get into the postseason healthy, they look really good. And yeah, the Cardinals certainly faded in the second half, but they shouldn't look that bad. I mean, and the other advantage too is that, like, you know, McVay didn't have to show any, like, he just called a, he wanted like a plain vanilla offense. Like, they didn't run trick plays. They didn't really use Cup very much. You know, they didn't bad, like, they really just had a very basic, you know, offensive attack that was just, and they couldn't, you know, Arizona just couldn't stop it. So, you know, they're not, you know, he'll have tricks up his sleeves that he can use. And again, I think, you know, the Bucs are a really good team. But I just think this is a tough one. You know, it's hard to repeat. And I really like where the Rams are right now. So, yeah, I think, I you know, again, not, you know, it's not, I don't see it as a mismatch, you know, I think the Rams are looking really good right now. The biggest concern is just Stafford, is still remains flawed and they can't afford too many of his patented pick sixes from inside the 20. So that's the one thing. And that's where it's really important for them to, you know, and that's, you know, against Arizona, they were able to sort of call a simple game that didn't really risk that. But that's the one thing is if they get into that's the one thing. If the game is close in the fourth quarter, that, you know, would you rather have Brady or Stafford? So that's the one concern, but I like the Rams a lot.
Well, this then leads us to what might be one of the greatest potential divisional playoff games of all time. Certainly one that is highly anticipated with the Bills and the Chiefs. Bills eviscerated the Patriots on last weekend. The Chiefs didn't have any problems with the Steelers, although the Steelers were pretty bad for a playoff team. So we may not have learned too much more about either of these teams last week, but this certainly is the highlight of the week. The Chiefs are favored by 1.5 at home, which I think is quite remarkable. That shows a tremendous amount of faith in the Bills because, you know, that's effectively giving the Bills the advantage if it was a neutral field. I don't know, you know, maybe so. I mean, so much depends on
whether you're going to get awesome Josh Allen or just kind of okay Josh Allen. And the lack of consistency there is the one thing that I think, you know, really makes me question whether the Bills can go all the way in any given week, though. They can certainly blow out any team in football. So I don't know here, you know, that this is a heck of a game, and I'm real curious to see what you guys have to say about it.
I'll probably write about it this weekend, but the Bills probably had the greatest offensive game in the post-merger history of the NFL. Like literally they scored a touchdown in every drive except for the kneel down, like not even a fourth down. Like it was just like there's only, I think, been two games in which a team had a higher offensive DVOA. And those were like, you know, regular season games. You know, this is not only a perfect defensive game in cold weather against a top five defensive team by DVOA, coached by the greatest defensive coach in NFL history. And they scored a touchdown. I mean, it really is just astonishing. By the way, I should say that although my betting last weekend was successful fiscally, it's spiritually a huge loss because my bet in that game was the Patriots parlayed with the under.
The Bills treated the Patriots like Alabama treats Louisiana Tech. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah. So that, you know, it's never a good sign when one team covers the under themselves. So it's safe to say that did not pay out. But the thing is, in retrospect, that seems really dumb. But, you know, the nagging concern here is like the Bills lost to the fucking Jaguars. they just have these weird off games. But I mean, you know, I don't think there's any question that if a team gives you their best game, the Bills are the best team in the NFL, like they have, including the Chiefs. Like, I think they have the highest, like Allen. And here, the amazing thing about Allen is that if you told me that, you know, because of his athleticism, he'd outperform his college performance, the model would have been like kind of a 70s throwback or like Donovan McNabb, maybe, like a guy who never really developed a shorter intermediate game, but just made enough big plays and ran enough that the overall package was a net positive. But what's shocking about that is that he's just not even on that curve. Like he makes short throws. He makes intermediate throws. Like he's a complete package when he's at his best. Like it's astonishing to me, you know, how well he's developed. Like that was just a flawless game. Like that is, you know, I've never seen any quarterback like Rodgers, Brady, like Manning, like, you know, he's like yesterday he was like Peyton Manning who could run. Like it was unbelievable. You know, so obviously the difference is that like Manning was that good week in and week out for many years, and Allen does not quite have that consistency, but it's pretty remarkable. Like it's pretty stunning. So I mean, like, I think any model will tell you to take the Bills. You know, like I think they're the best team by DVOA this year. Like their upside is so strong, but you know, I don't like them as much as that should indicate, just because I'm still a little bit, you know, like I don't really understand why they just go through these bad patches. But you could also say the Chiefs, you know, it's the same thing. So it's very hard to say. Like they're both unusually high variance teams, you know, given the talent they have and given that they're well coached. So, you know, I don't know. I think that, you know, if I have to bet, I'll probably bet on the Bills just because I go with what models tell me to if I have actual money on the line. But I don't feel as confident as I should probably, given their performance last week. First of all, because the Chiefs are also really, really damn good. But also just because, you know, they just have these weird lapses sometimes. They don't really understand. Having said that they were, ever since halftime, that Tampa Bay game, they've been pretty much a juggernaut. So I don't know what for that. They've just been out. And then they really beat up the Patriots badly in that second game. Like, I think worse than the score indicated.
Yeah, I mean, we expressed all kinds of concern about the Chiefs earlier this season, and the Chiefs really answer all those questions, right? Right. I mean, they did have some weird losses late in the season, but, you know, they really came together. They solved whatever problems that they had to solve. And, you know, in the end, that's kind of why I would take the Chiefs, 1.5? I'll take the Chiefs minus the 1.5 here. You know, again, the home field matters.
Especially in Arrowhead.
You know, when Arrowhead, right. I mean, that's a really enthusiastic.
It's very hard to pick,
Chiefs crowd. And they know how to cheer on a team. And they know what a championship team looks like. So, I mean, it's interesting that this is what, Scott, you identified as being the championship game, was the Bills versus the Chiefs. You know, I do think that whichever team comes out of this is going to be pretty heavily favored over whichever teams comes out of the Titans Bengals game. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really fun game. I'm really looking forward to this. It's a great fourth game of the playoff weekend. So this is well spaced. And yeah, I mean, I won't be disappointed by other team and looking forward to what they can do.
Yeah, and especially given the Bills' history too. You know, this is just such a, you know, like one of the, you know, it's like one of the longest, you know, droughts of, you know, in a long time. And so there's a lot, you know, it would have been really fun 5 years ago when neither, you know, both teams had an unbroken history of like horrible playoff collapse, you know, but, you know, like the Chiefs have obviously won one, you know, but, you know, I still think that's, it's just a phenomenal game. Like I cannot wait to watch it. And I hope it lives up. You know, I really hope that we get the kind of game that we expect, because it should be it should be really fantastic. It'll be Nance and Romo, right?
I'm sure it will be. Yeah.
So that'll be a trade. Yeah. That's going to be sports highlight of the year, no question. And I think pretty clearly the two best teams in football. And that's not. I think that, you know, both the Rams and Packers would, you know, I think be very close competition to Super Bowl, but I think those are the two, or at least I will say this, they're certainly the two best teams when they're at their best.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to point to this. Yeah. People are going to point to this podcast and laugh when Tom Brady wins another Super Bowl. Right.
I don't know. Yeah. Again, I'm not ruling them out, but yeah, it's I mean, that's, you know, you're generally pretty safe betting with Tom Brady. No question. So, I mean, that's the thing, is that having winnowed out, the good news is that, like, there are none of those upsets which leave you with an especially bad divisional, you know, like, that's one nice thing about a chalk, you know, wild card round, is that you get really good games. And even, you know, like, frankly, the 49ers have if the 49ers play as well as they could play and are healthy, like, that team could win. So, you know, like, they have a lot of upside potential. You know, that there's really, you know, there's no team that I can't see. And, you know, I can't say that
people be pretty stunned if Cincinnati wins the Super
Bengals
Bowl.
Bengals are probably the one, you know, but even then you could see it, right? Like, they have a very good young quarterback. They have a historically great rookie receiver. Like, it would be, but it's just, yeah. Do I see them winning like three games again? Like, no, I think that's the one, but they're not like ridiculous young. I mean, again, I don't think any of us would be surprised if they beat the number one seed. Or certainly wouldn't be shocked. But yeah, I think Cincinnati and Tennessee are, I think, a distinct cut below the rest of the teams. But really, it's, you know, the Super Bowl this year should be really, really fun.
And Tennessee, we were saying this about Tennessee, and they're the number one seed.
Yeah.
So, you know, for whatever that's worth. I do have one thing to offer, which it may seem trivial, but I'm not so sure. And I mentioned this to you guys earlier, but, you know, I was in a brewery last night in Syracuse, surrounded by Bills fans, and there was a Bills taco on the menu that was made up of buffalo chicken, blue cheese, carrots, and cabbage. And I thought, I'm not sure that we can let savages like this be our professional football champions. I mean, you know, it really makes the Patriots seem a lot more appealing.
I would eat that taco without a second. In fact, just today, I ate a buffalo chicken taco, which does not have carrots and cabbage in it, but it did have a buffalo chicken and blue cheese in it.
How did it go with your Mountain Dew based cocktail?
Okay, so anyway, point being, I spaced it out against a Reuben taco, right, which was sauerkraut and corned beef, right? So those were my two tacos, and
do they not have better taco places in Kentucky?
Okay, look.
That sounds tremendous. I would
100%. Yeah, Lemieux is correct here. Lemieux is unassailable. Yeah,
authenticity is bullshit. And it's
I agree, but I also cannot imagine
a tortilla with some kind of pickled condiment, right? Like, that's a buffalo chicken. What a great American invention. Like, tremendous. And none of this, like, I don't want, like, these, like, it's not an authenticity thing, but I actually don't like the alternative flavored wings. Like, good buffalo, I want Frank's hot sauce and butter. Like, you know, like, good, you know, buffalo wings. You know, I'd probably put like.
Oh, I picked up two bottles of the buffalo chicken garlic, spicy garlic sauce at Costco. They had that, and I plan on putting it on every food I can consume between now and like when the bottles run out.
And so, yeah, pickled carrots, great. Pickled cabbage, great. Like, all tremendous, excellent ingredients. I, you know, would 10 out of 10 would eat. There's absolutely no complaint.
Listen, Loomis, you once told me that a Korean taco would not work, right? I think it's a great idea.
Spicy bulgogi and tacos are delicious.
Okay, maybe you said something.
I was obviously wrong.
But this is but this is the food of Western New York we're talking about here. Like, have you been to Western New York? Like, people, like, are we seriously thinking that this is going to be good? I recognize they created the buffalo wings. I recognize that, you know.
I mean, that's a greater achievement than like Southern England, right? I mean, that's that's pretty substantial.
Yeah, no, that's what. I mean, that's something to hang your hat on. You know, that's the buffalo wings is a tremendous product.
You can live on that legacy for a while, okay?
But not in. But I ask no questioning of this taco. I don't know.
What are you going to diss East Utica Greens next? I mean, come on.
Like, well, you know, I really need is the garbage plate taco. Okay, now that is true upstate New York, and I think that would work so well in a taco.
Yeah, no, there are legitimately bad upstate food traditions to make fun of, but you know, buffalo wing, you're attacking it at Western New York strength there.
It's more of the taco form that I'm attacking it at. It's going to be the tortilla is going to be garbage too. So.
Look, the point of the sort of the diffusion of tacos is that one can put virtually any kind of food into a tortilla and call it a taco.
Of course, right? One can do that. The question is whether one should.
And one should. There's not something that's good that can't be made into a taco.
Here's the thing. If you're in a sports bar, I would much rather have a buffalo chicken taco than the ordinary chicken taco, which is probably going to be the, you know, desiccated chicken breast they also put on the fucking barbecue chicken pizza, which, by the way, I do not disagree with that. Humanity. Like, that's, yes, you know, California owes the world a lot for that one. So that is
I agree with that, but then I would not order tacos in a shitty sports bar, so.
But I think your real objection is just the idea of having tacos at a sports bar. But like conceptually, the buffalo chicken taco is a perfectly fine idea, and I would consume one without hesitation.
I mean, honestly, at a sports bar, you can't go wrong with the chicken fingers. Chicken fingers and tots, right? That's what you do.
I think Loomis's best argument is that, like, why not just skip the middleman and just order the wings?
This is the consensus we can come to.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So that is the best argument.
Consensus has been reached.
Yes. Shows you that democracy can work.
Yeah. Yes,
now it does. Get that. Yes. If you don't have Joe Manchin and Chris. Right, you know, Joe Manchin right. And Chris.
I feel about this. So, but anyway, well, I suppose that this hour of our listeners' time, they can never have back. And, you know, good. So I guess we close it there. Gentlemen, thank you. I look forward to we'll maybe get together again before the Super Bowl and talk about all this stuff. And I hope you all have a great night.
Yeah, sounds excellent. And we can also let readers know that we will, you know, we've got some, we expect to have some pretty great guests for our History of the Blogosphere series. So keep tuned for that as well. And if you enjoy these, always consider giving to our Patreon.
Thank you all. And all of our listeners/readers agreed on the Patreon and enjoy your NFL weekend. Good night, everybody.
Cheers.
Thank you again for listening to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. We would like to thank Elizabeth Nelson of the Paranoid Style for supplying the music necessary to make this podcast possible. You can find this track and the rest of the Paranoid Styles catalog anywhere you can find quality music. If you would like to support the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast or any other aspect of the Lawyers, Guns, and Money project, please visit us at www.patreon.com/lawyersgunsandmoney or donate through the PayPal link on the main website. Thank you again,